This is Noisy People. I'm Tim Perkis. Today, my guest is filmmaker Caroline Martel. Her documentary film Wavemakers looks at the Ondes Martineau, an early synthesizer invented in France in the 1920s, and traces its curious history up to the present day.
You see, it's a real musical instrument without string or wind. The sound is produced electrically by means of radio valve.
Quand on entend les ondes Martineau, c'est une monodie qui parle de quelque chose qui est unique.
Je t'ai dans la peau, y a rien à faire, tu es partout sur mon corps.
The flood of technical inventions appearing at the beginning of the 20th century transforms society as radically as the digital revolution that is disrupting our world. By the 1920s, the more future-oriented visionaries began questioning why the arts should not be transformed by technology as well. In 1929, mathematician and aesthetic theorist Joseph Schillinger would ask, why, in a world where nighttime Broadway dazzles with the light of artificial suns, sweaty men in tailcoats still rub calf guts with horsehair or blow into brass tubes? And in a round of concert/lecture demonstrations throughout North America and Europe, Leon Theremin spent the 1920s promoting his famous etherphone, played by waving one's hands in the air. A commercial product sold by RCA for $175, it was claimed that without musical knowledge or training of any sort, anyone can make exquisitely beautiful music with it. Well, a theremin is actually pretty hard to play. But some months after Theremin's appearance in Paris in 1928, Maurice Martineau, a cellist and former World War I telegrapher, announced his instrument, the Ondes Martineau, which might be translated as Martineau's Wavemaker. Dispensing with the gimmick of waving one's hands in the air, his instrument, which like theremin's was still monophonic, was an expertly designed real musical instrument with a reasonable learning curve and a great range of expressive possibilities. It was taken seriously by the serious in the French musical world, and throughout the 20th century, hundreds of compositions were written for it. Caroline Martel's film traces its ups and downs and the curious community of ondistes who keep its tradition alive.
Okay, Caroline, thank you for talking with me. Could you just describe briefly what the instrument looks like or how one plays it?
I'll do it, but I don't know why, like, it's, that's why I did this film, to not have to explain it.
Yeah, it's difficult to describe, but I understand
that. Yeah, so, well, it has a keyboard, but it's a monophonic keyboard. You can play in two ways, either with a keyboard or with the ribbon.
So you can wiggle your hands on the keys to get a vibrato effect.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
And then, but then this other controller was really interesting. The ruban.
Yeah, the ribbon. So that's like, it's kind of like the ring, like the Ondes Martineau players, like a ring of being married to their instrument. That's really how I see it.
The ring controller is an actual ring the player puts on a finger of the right hand, which is attached by strings to pulleys on either end of the keyboard. By moving the ring in the air above the keyboard, the pitch of the voice is moved up and down, gliding with very natural vibrato possibilities. It can sound very much like the theremin, but with the keyboard reference below, it's much easier to play precise pitches.
So yeah, this allows for like a voice-like form of playing, something much more lyrical. And the essential element is really the expression key, la touche, as they call it. If you don't press on the expression key, no sound comes out from the instrument. It's really kind of the trigger, the kind of on and off trigger, but that modulates the you know, envelope of the sound, the volume of the sound, so you can also make staccato effects, like percussive effects with the touch. And so this is, you know, what they call like the soul of the instrument. It's really there. Three main speakers to the On Martenot. There's the kind of main, they call them the diffuseur. There's the main diffuseur. There's one in wood. There's one called the metallic, which has a gong in it, which reverberates and can really create a kind of metallic cold sound.
So they're regular loudspeakers, but they're in a case with other resonant, with like a resonant gong, or there's one that has strings and...
Yes, called La Palme, the palm. So it was kind of, its drawing is really kind of feminine and Japanese style that was inspired by the encounter that Maurice Martineau's sister Ginette had with Ramin Tagore. You know Tagore?
Tagore, the name's familiar, but I don't know.
Okay, well, Tagore is this Indian philosopher, ethnomusicologist, composer, poet, who fell in love with the On Martenot when they had the world tour to show the instrument in the early 30s. And anyways, he was very influential on the Martenot family in terms of like teaching arts with this, you know, philosophy, this Martenot philosophy. And the palm works with strings that reverberate by sympathy. And this, you know, creates really ethereal type of, you know, sound. And So it's possible to combine the different loudspeakers of the Martenot and create a really wide range of timbres.
Talk to you about the culture of the On Martenot. It seems, at least as it's presented in your film, that there is a very strong culture of that instrument, almost a sort of spiritual or religious aspect that goes through the thinking of enthusiasts of this instrument.
On parle quand on parle des ondes. On parle de... Moi, je trouve qu'on parle de la vie.
This is Suzanne Bidet-O'Day, a virtuoso ondiste. She's saying, what do we talk about when we talk about the waves? We talk about simply life. Life at its most precious, at its most powerful, at its most fragile. There's something hollowed out about the voice of the soul. It creates a void. When we hear the On Martenot, we are perhaps not so much filled as emptied out in a way.
C'est comme un son unique qui serait le son qui dit, c'est monodique, hein?
It's a unique sound with a richness because it's monophonic. It speaks of being unique. It clearly states its uniqueness, saying that we also are unique in the cosmos. It is a musical voice which speaks in a purified way, simply, almost naïvely, one sound. This is what the Martenot timbre says.
The instrument was created by Maurice Martenot really as an instrument, as a mean to something. he grew up in this very musical family. His older sister, Madeleine Martineau, I think she was 9 or 10 years older than he was, developed this pedagogical method to teach music, which was really avant-garde in the 1910. It was all about expressivity and, you know, relaxing your body and music as this fluid that is in us and that we should let out, not as this like thing you have to perform in a very perfect way. And Maurice Martineau was kind of the guinea pig of his older sister, along with his younger sister.
So his own musical education was...
And so himself and his sister Ginette like grew up, in music, in the kind of musical universe. As the story goes, when he was a radio telegraphist in the First World War, hearing the kind of interference that the triodes would make, you know, they would emit these sound waves. Uh-huh. And he thought that this was really quite amazing musical material that we should tap into. And he felt that electricity or electrical sound, it's a little bit of a paradox, because he really believed in something immaterial, but yet the Dion Martineau is really material and very sensual, and it's all about, you know, connection or contact with the body. But to him, the fact that you could modulate an electric sound with not much effort and be very, you know, minute and specific and sensual and spontaneous. Like, he really cared people to feel natural when they would play music or when they would allow music to come out of themselves. That's really how he saw it. And you know, being a cello player, you know, you have to use the...
The bow.
When you play piano, you know, you have to press on these keys. And he felt that the potential of electricity was to not have to make much effort in playing music. It's like the theremin, that was kind of the same thing.
Je dois dire que il y a une chose qui me chagrine, c'est l'extraordinaire confusion.
I have to say, there is something that bothers me. It's the immense confusion people have regarding the word electronic. Between electronic music, music made on tape or by synthesizers, and an electronic instrument that is played by a human being, they don't realize what is lost when production is mechanized.
Remember Joseph Schillinger, whom I mentioned earlier, with the sweaty men in tailcoats? He and Martineau were both visitors to Theremin's Etherwave Salon, the first new media think tank, in 1930. I bring him up again to point out that a deep split emerged between two schools of musical futurism that Martineau was just alluding to in that quote we just heard. Schillinger was perhaps a better prophet when he said, "By 1950, the men who will be responsible for the music of radio and television will be neither composers nor performers, but a new kind of musical engineer who will operate the machines that compose and perform music." He's captured in that something of what happened with the development of serialism, formal experimentalism, computer music, minimalism, and current pop and techno music production. The sweaty men are largely out of work. Whereas Martineau saw technology as a way to do the exact opposite, to build instruments of greater and greater sensitivity to human nuance, to move forward an inherently romantic project of enhancing musical expressivity and a sort of soul-to-soul communication. I can't help but admire this impulse, as quixotic as it might be, and out of step with where we are now, for better or worse.
Well, if you listen to recordings in the 40s and 50s, it's, you know, usually, well, a lot of music before music concrète and, you know, like the avant-garde, like, came in, was very lyrical. So the On Martineau and the theremin are like these instruments of electronic voice. Yeah. And so they were often played, like, you know, in a, with a voice-like manner in a lyrical way. And in fact, like, in the 60s and 70s, in France, there was a little bit of a backlash against the On Martineau because it was associated with that type of playing, which was a little bit passé or with, like, old romantic singers. But yeah, I don't think that the instrument is stuck in one type of repertoire or sound, although that's maybe what got most known. It was really championed by the French composers in the 40s and 50s, and so some of the repertoire comes from there, like André Jolivet, Darius Milhaud, Arthur Honegger. If you listen to the On Martineau in Olivier Messiaen's music, it's not so lyrical. I find it really playful. Of course, sometimes it's much like birds or angels. He saw the On Martineau as like a little bit of a kind of angelic instrument. The Martineau family was always kind of future-oriented. They didn't really care about the past or archiving their things properly or keeping each of the instruments. Like, you have to know that there were 281 On Martineau fabricated. So that's really, you know, very little. And this is my own estimate, but there's maybe just like 70 instruments that are still, you know, in function around the world. But they're not museum instruments. You know, they're used by On Martineau players. There has been a risk of mummification of the instrument. Like, if you just see it as this instrument, very precious, rare instrument from the past, and all the players are very much against this vision. I wouldn't say necessarily a bright future, but there is a future. There's a very interesting new generation of players in France because the instrument is still being taught there. The Conservatoire de Musique de Montréal has stopped teaching the instrument in the last 20 years, but the scoop is that it's going to be back next year. So with the film, we were able to kind of create a momentum. But in North America, the youngest On Martineau player, Geneviève Grenier, is just turned 50. So, you know, we need a kind of next generation. But in France, they have this group of very talented musicians who work in jazz. They have like punk bands, prog band. It's really alive and kicking. The instrument will be out of its original aura, but it's gonna live on and
have a life
and develop. Yeah.
Oh, good. All right. Well, thank you very much for talking with me.
It's been
good
a pleasure.
Luck with your film.
Well, yeah. Maybe we can mention that the film is indeed available online on iTunes, but also on Fandor.
Oh, it is. That's on Fandor.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
This has been the Noisy People Podcast number 4. My thanks for this episode go to my guest, Caroline Martel, to Kathy Garretts of the Pacific Film Archive for scheduling the screening of Wavemakers in Berkeley, to Megan and Rick Prelinger of the Prelinger Archive for hosting us for the interview, and to Spices 3 Restaurant in Oakland, California. This podcast is available for subscription through iTunes, through my website noisypeople.net, and through the Noisy People channel of our partner Creative Disturbance, a podcasting project of Leonardo and the University of Texas, Dallas. In addition to Noisy People, you can find dozens of podcasts on various subjects in art and science at their site, creativedisturbance.org. Noisy People is a project of Artifact Recordings, and this episode was produced in March and April of 2015.